This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Even if you don't have TikTok downloaded on your phone, you've probably come across TikTok videos being shared across all other social media platforms that you're on. Last year, TikTok was the most downloaded app in the world and now has a reported user base of more than a billion people. But despite its addictive nature, or perhaps in spite because of it, it's often found itself in the middle of controversy from its impact on people, especially children's mental health, to privacy concerns over user data. So now TikTok has been in the news cycle once again, with the US threatening to ban the app in the country again. Is TikTok really a national security issue? Should our concerns with cybersecurity lie elsewhere as well? Munira Mustafa, Executive Director of Shiseo Group, joins me to delve into this issue and to discuss as well what Malaysia can do to shore up our cybersecurity protection. Thank you so much for joining me today, Munira.
All right, thank you for having me.
Now, the US actually has already banned TikTok from government devices, alongside several other countries that have done that. You know, for example, the UK, Canada, New Zealand, just to name a few. In India as well, in 2020, I should mention, had actually banned TikTok completely, along with several other apps following geopolitical tensions with China. And so now the US is talking about banning the app completely, over concerns of user data being accessed and stored by TikTok. But maybe could you help to unpack this issue a bit for our listeners to help us understand what's actually happening? You know, why was TikTok CEO as well questioned by US lawmakers? What is actually happening with TikTok right now?
Right. So this is one of those situations where multiple developments are happening simultaneously that key stakeholders were unable to adapt quickly to the rapidly changing digital environment and address the critical issues that emerge. The inability to foresee the meteoric rise of TikTok, which surpassed even Instagram in terms of influence and cultural impact, contributed to these uncertainties and sluggishness from both the US and China's policy responses. So what happened here was that when TikTok was emulating what they believe to be successful, it's likely that the creators, developers, they didn't fully appreciate the implications of policies like GDPR and related laws, which may have been perceived by them as peripheral issues until the platform started to amass a large user base that valued data protection. So in the past, their user experience was primarily shaped by platforms like WeChat, which was primarily Chinese, Chinese from China. So because of the intensified scrutiny from Western countries, TikTok is under pressure to comply with Western policies and ensure that their practices combat perceptions of espionage. To signal this commitment to transparency, TikTok has already separated from ByteDance. They're working diligently to ensure compliance and have even established separate entities such as ByteDance. We have three. ByteDance, TikTok for Global, and TikTok US Data Security to meet these standards. So if TikTok gets banned in the US, that would only really affect the TikTok USDS operations because TikTok will still be available elsewhere. So yeah, there's multitudes of pressing issues here, and they all involve a blend of concerns about geopolitical competition, diplomatic ties, data protection considerations, surveillance, and intelligence gathering. So right now, TikTok is facing scrutiny from US, UK, Canada, EU's executive branch, all which have raised concerns regarding data privacy and security. So while these concerns are legitimate and should always be prioritized, the situation is further complicated by the fact that TikTok is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance. So this ownership has led to allegations that user data could potentially be accessed and stored by the Chinese government, which intensifies the anxieties surrounding the platform.
So what is it that makes, I guess, TikTok in particular so different from the likes of, you know, all the other social media apps that we use, from Twitter, Instagram, BeReal? Is it mainly because of who owns the company?
Okay, so it's kind of pretty much that and more. So to fully understand the unique dilemma surrounding TikTok that led the Congress to interrogate its CEO, it's necessary to understand the legal frameworks governing content regulations, data protection, and privacy. Mm-hmm. As countries have divergent legal interpretations and approaches to social media regulations, platforms operating globally, like TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, etc., they have to comply with regional and local laws, as well as the cultural values and norms of the countries where they operate. So social media companies, along with other global organizations that handle user data, are subject to various legal standards. These standards that govern data privacy, such as GDPR or California's data privacy law. In Malaysia's case, we have the Personal Data Protection Act 2010, also known as the PDPA. Mm-hmm. So these regulations have a significant impact on how these companies manage and protect user data. So the source of concern for the policymakers in Washington, D.C. is related to lawful access. And now you might ask, what is lawful access? Mm-hmm. So lawful access, it posits that tech companies should introduce vulnerabilities or maintain master keys, which allows law enforcement to access a person of interest device with a warrant or a suspect if there is a crime. So as digital evidence becomes more prevalent, some argue that law enforcement agencies need the ability to bypass these encryption protocols to conduct thorough investigations. Now, this idea is legally based on the notion that privacy is not absolute, mm-hmm. but it's limited by reasonable expectations. So in the US, they have the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unlawful search and seizure. But under certain circumstances, public safety must justify accessing an individual's privacy. So what happened here was that, if you remember what happened in 2016, the San Bernardino terrorist attack, it exemplifies this dilemma. Because Apple refused the FBI's request, even with a warrant, to create a workaround for a security feature on the perpetrator's iPhone. Now, Apple, back then, they cited two concerns. One, the need to create a new operating system for FBI, mm-hmm. which involved removing the security features and adding vulnerabilities into the encryption, which could get stolen. And two, the potential creation of a legal precedent that would greatly expand the government's power to invade people's privacy. Now, this court case became the cornerstone in the debate on encryption and lawful access. So TikTok's relevance to this issue lies in the fact that China has this legal framework, the National Intelligence Law, mm-hmm. which was enacted in 2017 under Xi Jinping to strengthen the legal basis for the country's security activities. So this law governs intelligence gathering by Chinese intelligence agencies, including the Ministry of State Security, the MSS, and the Public Security Bureau. And it mandates that individuals, businesses, and organizations operating in China, regardless of their nationality, cooperate with the intelligence gathering efforts and maintain the confidentiality of state secrets. Because of this, many people are worried that China would require TikTok to turn over user data to them under Beijing's national security laws. So the other concern is the potential of manipulating the data for influence operations, such as disinformation. So this law is at the core of Washington, D.C.'s concerns about TikTok, whether valid or not, and it underscores the differences of legal and policy culture between the U.S. and China.
Hmm. So thus far, then, I guess, has that law been used in relation to TikTok, or right now is it sort of a theoretical risk?
I think it's a theoretical risk because as far as I know, to the best of my knowledge, there's no sign or indications that China has used any of the data for manipulations.
Mm. All right. Now, you mentioned that, you know, sometimes these concerns are valid, right? And when we talk about, I guess, apps on our phone, you know, we have so many on our phone. And every now and again, you see something new pop up, it gains traction, you know, but then everyone's, and then following that, you'll have people raising concerns that, hey, if you download this app, you agree to the terms and conditions, you're actually giving away, there are actually some data privacy concerns, but no one really seems to take it that seriously. But are there actually risks posed by having these apps on our phones, whether, you know, it's a personal phone or if it's a government device?
All right. So if you're, first of all, we're talking about government device, right? Mm-hmm. If you hold a government position or you're employed in a government capacity, you should be aware that there are strict guidelines that exist mm-hmm. for managing your government issued devices. And you would know that installing unapproved, unauthorized, or unvetted apps or software is strongly discouraged to maintain the security and integrity of sensitive information on these devices. Mm-hmm. Also, it's highly recommended to have security applications or software installed on the device to minimize the risk of intrusions or breaches. And this was, in fact, the case for me when I was previously working at a government agency. And in fact, even now, given that I'm a security professional, I will confess that I should have separate devices myself, mm-hmm. one for personal use and one for work use. And I try to avoid installing any high-risk apps on my work phone. And I can admit that I do try to compartmentalize as best I can. For instance, like I use best practices such as using different emails for different needs. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's good practice to have throwaway details for temporary needs.
All right, we'll go for a quick break now and continue this discussion when we come back, Munira. On the show with me today is Munira Mustafa, Executive Director of Shoseo Group, joining me on the show today to discuss the recent news surrounding TikTok, especially with the possibility of a ban in the United States. And this is following how TikTok CEO Qiu Shouzi was also recently grilled by US lawmakers about the concerns surrounding data and privacy of users on the app. We'll be right back after a quick break, so don't go anywhere on Live and Learn BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo, and Munira Mustafa, Executive Director of Shoseo Group, is joining me on the show today to discuss cybersecurity threats. Now, this is coming off the news over concerns that user privacy and user data is being mined from TikTok. TikTok is such a huge app nowadays. It's, it was the most downloaded app in the world last year. It has a reported user base of more than a billion people. But it has had its fair share of controversies over things like mental health, things like data privacy, and that in particular has been the crux of the issue over why, I guess, it's been in the news recently. Now, Munira, how might the data that's been mined from social media apps, right, be used, especially by more malicious actors? What are we concerned about here?
All right. So there are several, risk of exploitations. Malicious actors can exploit user data in various ways. I think like the primary concern that the public have right now is identity theft, for instance. Like cyber criminals can use personal information to impersonate individuals, access financial accounts, or commit fraud in their name. Mm-hmm. And that can cause financial losses or even reputational damage. And then the other issue we have is social engineering attacks, because when you have someone's personal information, malicious actors can craft targeted phishing campaigns or manipulate victims into divulging sensitive information or perform actions that can compromise the security, because it gives the false impressions that they know you and you tend to be more trustful of people that you feel comfortable. I mean, you implicitly have this zone of comfort. And then the other issue of risk is blackmail and extortion. So malicious actors can use the sensitive or private information to coerce individuals into complying with the demands, or you might face the risk of having your personal details exposed. And there's also disinformation campaigns, because they know what you might respond to online. So they would use this data to create and disseminate false information and manipulate your opinion and undermine trust in institutions or people. There are several other risks as well, like that also include espionage, insider threats, profiling, targeting, sabotage even. And even right now, I think that the most current concern is the recruitment for cyber criminal activities, also known as the cyber slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, Munira, how feasible do you think it is to actually ban an app in a country? We know that India did it, but is it actually even possible in this day and age?
Okay, so let's be realistic. If it's not TikTok, it's something else. Mm-hmm. So we just have to accept the fact that this is the reality we have to coexist with. And we just have to learn to anticipate and manage risks. And we also have to recognize the fact that this is clearly a generational gap problem. Mm-hmm. If we're going to talk about banning, I'll get to that in a bit. But we also have to, like I say, it's a generational gap problem. TikTok is clearly designed to capture the Gen Z market. And who knows what will come of the TikTok because the digital landscape is going to shift again. This is not a probability. This is a certainty. And the following generation may not be too enamored with TikTok by then. So this is the main, this is mainly the reason why policymakers are baffled by TikTok. It's simply because they're out of sync. So if we want to talk about banning, yeah, sure, banning is feasible, but is it really practical? Or because I would argue it's very counterintuitive. I mean, like, yeah, we've banned so many things, but you know, we will just have to go through the usual process with our policymakers at Parliament. But I'm saying that just because we can ban TikTok doesn't mean that we should. We need to consider the potential consequences of such action. So a ban on TikTok could set a precedent for further restrictions on freedom of expression and communication, which can create a slippery slope that could ultimately lead to more severe limitations on personal liberties. And also, banning TikTok may not be an effective solution to the concerns regarding data privacy and security. So instead, a more nuanced and balanced approach that addresses these concerns while safeguarding fundamental rights should be pursued. For example, having regulatory oversight, transparency, and even collaboration with the platform may be more effective in promoting security and protecting user data without the need for a complete ban. So we have to recognize that the online world has become an integral part of the modern communication because this is the reality we're living in now, and that many people rely on platforms like TikTok to generate income, express themselves, build communities, and engage in creative pursuits. So we have to consider the potential impact of any decision that may limit these activities and freedom.
If we talk about, I guess, cybersecurity threats in general, right, beyond, I guess, these data privacy concerns with apps, for example, what actually, what do you think we should be most worried about? What are you most worried about?
All right. So this is a tough question because to determine or decide the highest priority cybersecurity risk would depend on the specific context, industry, and threat landscape of the organization or individual. Mm-hmm. So in terms of prioritization, I would arrange threats based on their potential for significant impact and shared consequences. For instance, I would argue that disinformation and misinformation is a primary concern with me. Mm-hmm. Some traditional cybersecurity professionals might disagree with me with the on the inclusion of disinformation and misinformation because they're often viewed as challenges for policymakers, not really a cybersecurity issue. But it's important to recognize that these issues inherently come from online risks, mm-hmm. which places them within the realm of cybersecurity. So disinformation and misinformation can be regarded as cybersecurity risks because threat actors can strategically manipulate the truth. The rise of AI, in fact, has made it easier to conduct highly personalized targeting, which can have significant implications for major events, and that can include elections and financial markets. And there are other types of risks to consider, and these can include, as I mentioned earlier, phishing attacks, ransomware attacks, insider threats, and data breaches.
This always that issue of anonymity when it comes to everything online. Does that make cybersecurity threats even more difficult to deal with because of the facade of anonymity that a lot of people can have?
Right. So you can be as careful as you can online, but you're not, you can't entirely erase your digital footprint. Mm-hmm. So, if you want to keep yourself secure, we just need to keep ourselves updated with the latest developments and best practices on managing our digital footprints. And there are simply no shortcuts for this.
Hmm. How seriously does Malaysia take cybersecurity issues? You know, because I guess it's something that seems rather new that we're talking about more only in the recent years.
It's not that new, but it's because the threat environment has shifted so rapidly. So it's an effort to keep up. So Malaysia's susceptibility to cyber attacks is no different from any other country globally.
Mm-hmm.
Cybersecurity threats, including hacking, data breaches, and cyber espionage, they can all affect Malaysia with the same likelihood as other countries. But with that said, the performance of a nation in terms of cybersecurity, that can be influenced by factors such as strategic mindset, policy preparedness, and institutional oversight. These are the variables that can determine how well a country responds to cyber threats and prevent potential cyber attacks while maintaining its resilience.
Hmm. You mentioned a bit about, looking at having better regulatory oversight, transparency, for example. What do you think Malaysia can do to put in place to address cybersecurity issues so that we are more resilient towards these threats?
We need to keep, I think I mentioned earlier that we need to keep up to date with the latest development. Mm-hmm. And I think that, for instance, our PDPA badly needs an overhaul to fit current norms and culture, online culture, because it was enacted in 2010. That's mm-hmm. like over 13 years ago. We can't use that. I mean, we can, but it's slowing us down in terms of, you know, keeping up with what's going on. And as I said earlier, that the threat landscape shifts so fast, so rapidly, there are new problems emerging. And I think that the most practical thing to do is to consistently review policy in place and amend and update them.
Mm. It's a matter of flexibility and adaptability, isn't it? Because like you say, things are changing so quickly, it will likely change even faster, you know, in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Policymakers just have to be agile.
Hmm. I guess who are the perpetrators or potential, you know, actors that we should be worried about when it comes to cybersecurity risks, especially at the national level?
So this can vary because it really depends on what are the goals. And this is a question I keep asking my colleagues and clients. Mm-hmm. What are the goals? And following that, what are their TTPs, tactics, techniques and procedures?
Could you elaborate more on that? What does that look like?
Because it depends. If it's political goal, they would use disinformation tactic. If mm-hmm. it's like financial goal, they would use fraudulent tactics.
Mm. All right. What about, I guess, reaching out to these tech companies, right? Is there a space for better cooperation? Is there willingness for better cooperation to do something about it so that, you know, we don't sort of reverse so that we don't sort of go towards, you know, an outright ban on whenever something goes wrong?
Absolutely, because what people don't realize is that almost all tech companies now, they all have their global offices, compliance departments, legal departments, even policy and security departments. I think Facebook has what they call, I can't remember right off the bat right now, mm-hmm. but they're all designed to counter issues online. I mean, such as, right. So Facebook Meta has this this department called the Dangerous Organizations, and they're designed to counter extremist groups, criminal groups that operate online. So, these departments exist to cooperate with government because no tech companies can operate globally or function without these. Because they need to keep themselves in check. At the same time, there has to be a stance on accountability as well. So it requires cooperation from all parties, basically. We can have all these terms and conditions, but on the government side, there needs to be more engagement and not just one-sided engagement. There needs to be more collaboration with these platforms. At the same time, platforms need to comply with certain regulations, law, and ensure that user safety is prioritized at all times.
What do you think are some key takeaways for you as a security expert, right, from this whole debacle with TikTok? Because it's been happening for years on and off, on and off. You know, what can we learn from this process?
I think we need to just accept that we live in a world full of risks, and we just need to learn to manage those risks. We should keep ourselves accountable. We should not expect a one-side participation. We should not be, think that we can absolve ourselves from our responsibility. So tech companies have their own responsibility, government has their own responsibility, and users have responsibility as well. At the same time, I also think that from the commercial sector as well, like advertisers, they could do a bit more to be more conscientious on where they're advertising, because a lot of these malicious behavior, they get traction partly because of the advertising as well. Like it's all about the attention economy, you know, it's all about the clicks. So I think that a whole, whole of society approach could help manage this. But at the same time, I also think that the government could be a bit more realistic in the, on the objectives and create better policies without having to resort to banning and curtailing personal freedom.
All right. And to round up our discussion, Munira, you know, I guess from the public's perspective, what can we do to be more aware and careful about the cybersecurity risks about our digital footprint?
So on the user end user side, we need to be more cautious with what we with what we click online as well. We need to be better at managing and keeping our password, you know, basically security hygiene, things like that. Also, when it comes to disinformation and misinformation, don't be too reactive with what you see online. I feel like a broken record because it's the one thing that I keep saying and repeat. I mean, there's a reason why some content online is deliberately provocative, because that's what they're aiming for. So try and not be too reactive. Maybe it's always a good idea to just either scroll past or maybe I'll look back again when I'm clearer, because I do that. I mean, I'm a human being. I mean, I have been reactive myself, and I'm trying to be less reactive myself because it's spontaneous. On the vendor side, there needs to be a more effort to manage data security as well. I think, again, this boils down to policy as well. I think there's not enough pressure on vendors to manage and comply with certain regulations and security, managing and storing data safely, securely.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Munira.
Thank you for having me.
I've been speaking to Munira Mustafa, Executive Director of Shazeer Group, about the recent issues surrounding TikTok, the potential of a ban in the United States, as well as what we can do, especially here in Malaysia, to strengthen our policies against cybersecurity threats. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcasts on BFM.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.